Hello, listeners. Shira and Isaac here, and welcome to the Innuendo and Outuendo podcast for October 24th, 2013. How are you, Isaac?
I'm doing well. What about you, Shira?
I'm doing well also. I have a lot of schoolwork and such, but I'm doing well. We have our first theater club event this week at my school, which is very exciting.
That's with Maggie Keenan-Bolger, isn't it?
Yes, we are doing a Skype chat with Maggie Keenan-Bolger for anybody who is interested. It's going to be very fun, and it is a new club at my school, so this is our first event, so we're all just getting ready for sort of theater club to come and take our school by storm.
That is so exciting. Yeah, I've got a paper I actually need to write after this that I just looked at, and I thought it was a 2-page paper. It's actually a 3-to-5-page paper.
Oh, gosh. Well, good luck on that.
Well, thanks. I should have started it before the day it was due, but, you know, college life, yo. Anyway, well, it's a fun episode this week. In theater news, we have Boys Week, which I think we've done once before. We don't really plan it. It just kind of happens. And so you get to listen to Ryan and Jonathan and I just ramble on and on about current theater happenings, including chit-chatting about the Las Vegas production of Mamma Mia, Roz Ryan's Long Run in Chicago on Broadway, and something else that I can't remember we discussed, but whatever, we ramble a lot, it's a good one. We also have a really exciting interview with current second national tour Glinda, Haley Patchoun, at the end of the podcast, so be sure to listen for that.
We also have our normal Wicked News and cast update sections, and we have a very exciting announcement about who won our 10th anniversary Wicked contest and who will be joining us on the podcast for next week.
Exciting stuff. So now, as usual, we head over to Jonathan with a cast update.
Hello, listeners. Jonathan here with this week's cast update. Robin Willner has returned to the Broadway company in the ensemble and as an understudy for The Witch's Mother and The Midwife. In the West End company, Ashley Gray has temporarily returned as the standby for Elphaba.
Hello, listeners. Shira and Ryan here with this week's Wicked News.
Willman Verkaik will perform in composer Andrew Lippa's upcoming one-night-only London concert, Andrew Lippa in Concert. This concert will be held on November 17th at the St. James Theater with showings at 2 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. For tickets and information, visit stjamestheater.co.uk.
That's exciting. I also believe that that's the night before her West End debut of Elphaba, so...
Yeah, that is, I think.
That's awesome. Donna Vivino has been cast in the upcoming off-Broadway concert engagement of Stars of David, running November 13th through December 15th at the DR2 Theater. For more information, go to starsofdavidsongs.com.
Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth will reunite for Entertainment Weekly's upcoming reunions issue that was actually released today. And I've been looking all over today, and I cannot find it. All the stores that around me have been sold out, so now I have to wait until tomorrow to kind of go out and search again to see if I can get it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, in Wicked news, the special 10th anniversary Wicked Playbill is now available for pre-order through the Playbill store. This Playbill will be distributed only at the 10th anniversary performance on Wednesday, October 30th. At 7 o'clock p.m. The Playbill will also include a 4-page insert, and as of now, the Playbill costs $10 to pre-order. I actually already pre-ordered my Playbill, and I don't know, apparently some locations have shipping prices, some do not.
Okay.
I was not charged for shipping.
That's good.
It was $10 flat, and I don't live in New York.
Okay.
So everyone should buy it. It looks very exciting, and it's really pretty on the top.
That's awesome. I'm going to be getting mine when I'm actually at the show, so I'm so excited.
That's awesome.
All right. Itai Ben-Shlomo will be performing the role of young David in a free public reading of The Rise of David Levinsky. For tickets and more information, visit www.symphonyspace.org.
Haley Gallivan has been cast in the Crucible Theater's upcoming production of Oliver. Ms. Gallivan will play the role of Nancy. The production will run from November 29th, 2013 through January 25th, 2014. For tickets and more information, visit sheffieldtheaters.co.uk/event/Oliver-13.
Jillian Cates and Libby Cervus will perform in Sing for a Cure, a concert benefiting breast cancer awareness. The concert will be performed on October 27th. at 8 p.m. at New York City's Sidewalk Cafe, 94 Avenue A. There is a suggested $10 donation at the door, as well as one drink minimum. All proceeds will go to the American Cancer Society's Making Strides Against Breast Cancer.
Several Wicked alums will perform in Broadway Loves the Spice Girls on November 10th at 9:30 p.m., including Stephanie Brown, Leslie McKinnell, Libby Survey, Natalie Daradich, Jenna Lee Green, Kate Loprest, and Christine Reese. The show will be held at the Canal Room, which is at 285 West Broadway.
That sounds like it's going to be an interesting concert.
Oh, absolutely.
On October 20th, Wicked will be taking over the NBC Experience store in Rockefeller Center with costumes on display and merchandise and memorabilia that will be available until November 1st. In addition, every weekend in October, Magnolia Bakery's 5 New York locations will be serving Wicked-themed treats that will be available through December 31st.
Casey Levy and Rebecca Naomi Jones, along with the rock musicals composer-lyricist Juliana Nash, will reunite in a concert of the show on December 9th, 2013. They will be backed by the original onstage Murder Ballad band at 54 Below. Tickets are priced between $35 and $45 plus a $25 food and beverage minimum. Reservations for the main dining room are available for 5 p.m., 5:30, 6 p.m., and 6:30. Doors open at 5 and the concert begins at 7.
That's it for this week's Wicked News, and now we'll head over to theater news.
Hi, listeners. This is Isaac, and I'm here with Jonathan and Ryan. It's Boys Week in theater news.
Woohoo!
Woo!
Yay! Which means that we've actually been on Skype for 17 minutes and have not started because we've been rambling. The thing. Anyway, so we have some exciting topics for you today. So, Ryan, why don't you go ahead and get us started?
Sure. The first topic that we're going to talk about is actually Hit List going to 54 on Below. Now, a lot of you may remember this from the show Smash. And on December 9th, they're actually going to do a full concert of it with Jeremy Jordan, Krista Rodriguez, and Annie Maness. And they're going to team up to perform Hit List in its entirety, featuring bonus songs that have never made it to air. So what are you guys' reaction? I know I'm assuming that you guys have watched Smash in the past. So what is your reaction to this?
Why is it not Bombshell?
I know. I am thinking the same exact thing.
Like, hello. I mean, granted, I'm glad that this is happening. Don't get me wrong, because I thought the music written for that show was good.
Yeah.
Bombshell.
Yeah, I think it's great that even though the show's been canceled, that fans of the show will still get a chance to see some of the people from it live and do some of the material that was featured on the show and some that wasn't even featured on the show. Live, I think it's great that they're putting this together. I have not been to 54 Below yet, but it looks like a really great place.
Yeah.
I hope to see something there soon. Definitely. So, yeah, I didn't even really watch, honestly, much of the second season of Smash, but I watched almost all of first, and yeah, I agree, Bombshell was really good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, it's really cool that it's happening and all that, so.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting, because, like, what we saw on the show was kind of snippets of songs here and there, and I guess for those of who are going to see it live, it'll be nice to kind of see it in its entirety without any interruption or anything. So I guess that's a good positive too.
Yeah, you know, I'd be very curious to see. You know, I don't know about Hit List just because we didn't know as much about it.
Yeah.
Bombshell, I think with tweets and some stuff done to it, would be a great show to try and bring to Broadway.
I think so too.
I agree.
I mean, and people have, like, been like, no. And, you know, and people are like, the score is killer. And, yeah, the score is pretty intense at times, but they can modify the score or even give her an alternate, you know?
Yeah, without a doubt.
So, I don't know.
Betty Anderson and Bjorn Ulvaeus' international hit musical Mamma Mia will return to Las Vegas in spring 2014 with an open-ended run at the new Tropicana. Performance dates and casting will be announced at a later time. The original Las Vegas production of Mamma Mia ended its six-year run at the Mandalay Bay Theater January 4th, 2009. So what do you guys think about Mamma Mia? You know, as you know, as most of you probably know, it just transferred theaters on Broadway, or it just left at the Winter Garden. It's going to be transferring over to the Broadhurst, and now it's opening a new company in Vegas. And I believe they're also starting up a new non-equity tour of the show. So there's been a lot of Mamma Mia hype recently. I think it's really cool that it's coming back to Vegas.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I agree. I mean, I love the show. I'll be very curious to see who the cast is.
Yeah. And I wonder if the Vegas version, because, you know, a lot of times when shows, you know, go to Vegas musicals, they tend to cut them down a bit. Like, I know Jersey Boys in Vegas is, I think, I don't know if it's 90 minutes, but it's definitely not as long as the Broadway production.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Mamma Mia, because I feel like Mamma Mia would be pretty easy to cut things, to cut some of the dialogue scenes and just have a lot of the songs.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I wonder what other shows could come to Vegas in shortened versions or even in full versions. Like, yeah. I could even see the Book of Mormon in Vegas, like, as a sit-down.
That'd be a good idea.
You could easily do that. Did you see, by the way, that this week there was a New Orleans theater critic, which, you know, that's
one of my... I did see that, yeah.
That, like, called it trash, which, yeah, it is kind of trashy entertainment, but come on.
Well, I think this person was probably a little bit conservative, and their view of things might have been a little bit different than the average New Yorker or, you know, theater goer in general. I think, I wonder if one of the tours of Book of Mormon, now that there are two, will ever visit Salt Lake City, Utah.
Oh, that would be definitely interesting.
Yeah, I feel like there would be protests. It'd be worse than going to, like, Westboro Baptist Church.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I feel like a lot of people that who grew up in Utah but aren't Mormon would really enjoy it and really relate to it.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard from people who actually are or who are former Mormons who went to see the show were like, it's scarily accurate.
Well, I mean... I don't know. I think Book of Mormon would work well. I'd be curious to see what they cut from these shows, but, you know, and usually, I mean, I'm sure the cuts would be, you know, appropriate cuts. I wonder if they tried to take Wicked, what would be cut out of Wicked?
Oh, God.
If Wicked would allow them to cut anything, which, you know, Wicked is Wicked.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I wonder if Wicked, if it were in Vegas as a sit-down, because, you know, the first national tour's been there, but I wonder if anything would be cut. I feel like they would have to cut some things.
It would be hard to choose, though. Like,
I feel like some of the book scenes would be cut.
Oh, yeah.
And they might cut, like, a verse out of The Wizard and I, you know?
Yeah.
Things to shorten it. I feel like the whole thing with Vegas shows is that it's not really that much about plot, but it's more about being all very splashy and showy and, like, more of a physical production than, like, a written musical, if that makes sense.
Right.
No, yeah, that makes sense.
And I can see them cutting, like, you know, just, like, little things. Like, they could cut the reprise of I'm Not That Girl. They could cut.
Yeah.
Or some of the Wizards stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe. Yeah, but a lot of the Wizards stuff you have to have, even though it's, like, blah, you have to have it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they could...
Maybe cut some of Something Bad.
Yeah.
That would be okay. We could just cut all of Something Bad for all I care. we could, I mean... I don't know. There's a lot of random stuff that you could probably pull. Like, you could, like I said, you could cut the first, or, like, the when I'm with, or when I meet the wizard verse of The Wizard and I, you could cut.
You the Wizard and I reprise.
You could probably, you could cut, like, after, I mean, these are, like, little 40-second cuts.
Yeah.
You could cut the reprise. You could cut, if No One Mourns the Wicked, they could cut out the, after Glinda does her end, goodness knows.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they could cut where the ensemble comes in. That's maybe 20 seconds.
Yeah,
there's a lot of things. You know, I was just thought of another show that would be great for a Vegas sit-down. Kinky Boots.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah. Definitely. That's just exactly what you need in Vegas. You know, fun, happy, woohoo.
Yeah. And I believe the tour of Kinky Boots is actually launching there next fall.
Oh, nice.
But I could also see a sit-down.
Yeah.
That'll be really fun. All right. So, on October 21st, Roz Ryan is making Broadway history, or that's how it's billed, but it's actually Chicago history, by being doing the most performances of any leading actress in the 17-year run of Chicago on Broadway. Now, this is actually the revival of Chicago. It's one of few revivals that's run longer than its original production. She plays Mama Morton and is beginning her 224th week, which is a new record. There were two actresses, Charlotte D'Ambrose and Marcia Lewis, who both had 223 weeks in the Broadway company. And Roz has been playing the role of Mama Morton on and off since 1999. And that's just crazy to me. She's actually returned to reprise her role every single year since then. So 2013 is her 15th consecutive year with the show. So what do y'all think of this? I just think it's kind of crazy, you know?
Yeah.
I definitely don't think she has the record for any performer in a principal role for a certain amount of time.
That's because Phantom of the Opera that got me.
Anthony Andrews was in Phantom for, I think, 23 years, and he did not leave on his own accord.
No, it's sad, but...
But I think with Chicago, I think the way it's worked for her, the way that it's been able to work for her, is that whenever she's wanted to do another show or she got another show, they've let her leave and come back.
Yeah.
I think that's the, you know, thing, because she left to do Scandalous and then came back. She's left a lot of times to do other shows and then came back to Chicago. It's actually a lot like Judy McLean in Mamma Mia. When she was Tanya, they would let her leave all the time to do other shows, like regionally, and then she would come back as Tanya, and now she got Donna.
Yeah, and Carolee Carmello left a good bit when she was Donna, too.
Yeah. Sometimes with the long-running shows, you know, they'll let people leave for, you know, a certain amount of time, and they trust them. They, you know, like them enough in the roles where they're okay with them coming back. But I wonder what it's like to actually do a role for that long.
Yeah.
Even with breaks in between, you know, I wonder if in 10 years from now, if anyone will be in Wicked for 10 years, you know. Well, yeah. There already actually are people in the Broadway company who've been there for 10 years. Not straight, but
people on and off, yeah.
Yeah, I saw Roz in, when did I see her, Jonathan? Was it 2011 or 2012?
It was 2012.
I think it was 2012 too. It's really bad that I asked you this, by the way, instead of knowing myself. But you know, you have your encyclopedia brain.
Yeah.
But no, Ron and I, she was definitely like completely there. There was no phoning in or anything like that. She was just nailing it.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. You know, sometimes, you know, when your people, but this is not directed at anyone in particular, but sometimes when people stay in roles for, you know, a long time, they tend to phone in sometimes, and maybe it might be time for them to leave. But it's good that she has been able to keep it fresh, maybe because she's been able to do some other things.
That's true, yeah. Get a new perspective when she comes back.
Yeah, because I imagine doing a role for, you know, 10 years straight without any breaks in between, that might get to be a little bit much.
But yeah.
It's good that they've let her leave to do other things, and then come back to Chicago,
yeah.
And hopefully that will happen in the future. Hopefully she'll get like another show, and then she can do that for you know, a few months or however long, and then go back to Chicago.
Yeah, what really cracks me up, this is random, but I'm looking at the article on Playbill right now. She's had so many press shots taken over the years just from doing it, and they did a little video of her and all that doing When You're Good to Mama, and her hairstyle has been different every single time she's come back.
I'm actually surprised that they've done so many different press shots. I mean, maybe other shows just are willing to do that, but Wicked generally does not take multiple press shots with people.
No.
I mean, she, in the one on Playbill, she has, like no hair in the front and then, like, a big ponytail in the back. In the video, she's got, like, big, froofy hair. When I saw her, she just had long, straight hair.
Yeah.
And it just cracks me up. I'm like, this is really, really funny. Oh, and then here, I'm looking on Google Images now, and this one, she has red hair with a different color hair. What do you know?
Funny.
It really is funny to me. Like, her hair has changed. Like, that'd be kind of funny if that was, like, the thing. Like, every time she leaves and comes back, they have to do something different with her hair.
Yeah, keep it fresh. That's why she's been able to be so...
They changed her hair.
There you go. Right, so that does it for this week's theater news, and let's hope we're going to head over to media with myself. Hi, listeners. This is Ryan here with this week's media. We have a couple of articles to start with, so let's get to it. The first group that we're going to start with is from the Second National Tourist Stop in Little Rock, Arkansas. There are four articles. Three of them have videos, which I'll insert here. And the first one that we're going to start with is a little behind-the-scenes video of how the load-in process works.
The Broadway musical Wicked making its way back to Little Rock beginning Wednesday night.
That's right. But you wouldn't really believe the amount of work that it takes to set this up.
Photojournalist Joe Booker taking a look behind the scenes at what it takes to bring a Broadway musical our way.
Right now what's going on is the load-in process. It takes Wicked 30 hours to load into the building. The fun fact is it only takes us about 5 hours to get out. It's obviously a lot faster coming down than going up. We've got about 100 people up on stage right now loading the show in to get us ready for opening night on Wednesday at 7:30. A hardworking crew here that helps us get the show in and operate the show each night. So it's actually not very difficult compared to some of the theaters around the country. So we're always looking forward to coming back to Little Rock. The additional people above what we travel with are, they're from the Little Rock area. And we get to employ them for a couple of weeks while we're in town doing the show.
My job is to ensure that all the electrical connections are made, that we have power for them, that the spotlights are operating correctly, house lights go up and down when they're supposed to. It's good for us because normally our road shows are here for 3 days, and this one's here for 2 weeks, so we get 16 shows. We don't have to set it up, work a couple of days and tear it down. It's certainly different than the productions we do locally.
Just means take it out.
It's a great job opportunity for the locals here. You know, having the show in town also brings a lot more business to restaurants, hotels, so it's really great for the community, and then providing the jobs up on stage is a great way for us to give back to Little Rock.
A lot of people are excited to see this. Oh, the yeah. Second time it's been here, and first time it was here, I think it was sold out, just like that.
It probably is going to sell out, especially this weekend.
So many people are happy it's back here. And a couple interesting facts. 250 pounds of dry ice are used per show on Broadway. Only about 200 pounds are used on the road.
And 4 to 5 miles of cable they're used by the electrics department on the road. That sounds like a lot, but compare that to 8 to 10 miles on Broadway.
It's unbelievable. And the show has 90 wigs using 70 during any given show. All are made of human hair and made individually for each actor using their own hairline in the front. So some things to think about if you get a chance to get out there and
see.
They
are the pros.
Yeah, they are, exactly.
The second article from the Little Rock Stop that we have is from THV11, and this is a little news interview with John Hillner, who plays Dr. Dillman on the Second National Tour.
Welcome back. It's a world-famous musical production that's been on the Broadway stage for almost 10 years and won 3 Tony Awards and also a Grammy Award. We're talking about Wicked. It's the musical that's now here in Little Rock for the second time. The performance tells the story of the Wizard of Oz from the perspective of Glinda the Good Witch and Elphaba, the Wicked Witch of the West. Joining me today is John Hillner, who plays Dr. Dillamond in the Wicked cast. So, so excited to have you here with us this morning.
Thank you, Lisa. It's good to be here. Thank you very much.
And we didn't know how you'd show up, if you'd show up as John or if you'd show up as
the goat.
As the goat.
Well, I can't go it all the way.
So you have to go see it if you want to see him as the goat.
Exactly.
Let's get right to it. We have so much to cover. Tell us about your character in Wicked.
Well, the character in Wicked is Dr. Dillamond, and he is he's a goat professor. Mm-hmm. And what he does is he teaches the children of Oz at Shiz University. And he's a very learned man, and he's been around the block, and he knows able to tell them what is good and bad about their essays and everything. And he recognizes that something's going on in Oz that is not that great, and something bad is happening, and he recognizes it. And the information he's able to pass along to Elphaba really drives her and her story of what she does. And and that's an important piece of the puzzle.
You two actually have a pretty close relationship, a good bond,
yes,
based off of experience,
yes,
in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, what do you enjoy most about playing Mr. Dillamond? You mentioned you're a goat. So what's it like playing a goat?
Well, it's interesting because you can pretty much get away with anything that you want. Nobody has a definite idea of what a goat should be, but
you do a great job.
I try to do as much as I can. Maybe one of the things I was hired for was the fact that I can impersonate a goat, but that's
anytime you want to do that, by the way.
There you go. I knew it was going to come out somewhere along the line.
We are so happy right now.
Everyone's
excited about that. Okay, this is something I'm curious about. I'm sure a lot of people at home too. The show is on the road all the time, many days, doing 2 performances a day. What is it like to keep up a schedule like that?
Well, it's actually not too bad for me because I don't spend a whole lot of time on stage. But for the witches, it's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of heavy lifting. They do a lot of the singing, and they're on stage pretty much all the time. But you get your rest. You know, you have time between shows where you can take a nap, or you can go and have a bite to eat. You can rest. You can it's about pacing, and you learn it and you figure it out when you're on the road. So, and if your hotel is close enough by, you can go and take a nap.
Which is always nice to do. And this isn't your first rodeo. You've been around. You've had a chance to do acting in several productions and also TV shows, I'm told. Tell us about your background.
Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of TV out in L.A. I've done movies, do whatever I can in New York. There's Body of Proof, Person of Interest, Law and Order, that kind of stuff. So it's like stuff during the day, and then you can do theater at night. That's what's really nice about New York, is that you can do you can do both of those things. And that's kind of what you try to do. You try to make keep as much of a presence in television as you can and also do your show at night. So
okay, and you guys are going to be here for a few more days.
A few more days.
Tell
we have till Sunday.
When you're leaving, okay.
We have till Sunday. So we have another seven performances starting
seven
tonight.
Seven performances. Yep. That's what you need to keep in mind if you're planning on getting out there to the show. Now is the time to do it. I promise that you will not be disappointed with this at all. John Hilder, who plays Dr. Dillamond, you'll definitely recognize him on the stage. Thank you so much for coming in
Thank
today.
Thank you, Lise. It's a pleasure.
Appreciate having you with us.
Yeah.
The next video that we have is of Haley Pichon showing us around the theater a little bit and actually talking about the show in Little Rock and talking about some of the sites that she got to see. And also the news anchor who was doing the interview also got to do a ride in the bubble. So make sure that you check that video out.
Well, many of you are likely familiar with The Wizard of Oz, but have you ever stopped to think about how the witches, good and bad, became the way they are? The authors of the hit Broadway musical called Wicked sure did, and Christina Munoz takes you behind the scenes to share what it's like to defy gravity.
Tell them how I am defying gravity.
I'm originally from Kansas, grew up, born and raised in Kansas, so The Wizard of Oz is very close to my heart.
A longtime Broadway performer, Haley Pichon, had always dreamed of playing the Good Witch, referred to as Glinda and Galinda, in the show Wicked.
Popular. I know about popular.
Wicked's been on my radar for 10 years when I first saw it with the original company on Broadway, and I'm so happy to be performing Glinda 8 times a week across the country.
Including a 2-week run here in Central Arkansas.
I've never been to Little Rock, so this is very exciting for me. It's gorgeous. It's, you know, there's a lot more things to do than I thought. I've seen the Riverwalk, which I really like.
Wicked is the untold story of the Witches of Oz, their friendship, and how they came to be who they are now, one good and one evil. The show has won 35 major awards, including a Grammy and 3 Tony Awards.
It's a lot of shoes to fill. You've got a lot of girls in the past who are, you know, people that I look up to, and the show itself is so popular, and it's a phenomenon for a reason because it's so wonderful. So it's a lot of good pressure, and I'm happy to continue the tradition of Wicked.
And this news anchor may be a long way from enchanting powers and floating bubbles for transportation, but for a few moments.
I'm going to put a safety harness around your waist
okay,
here.
Cool. I got to experience.
And if you want to hold on with one hand, you can.
The magic of theater.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
With some good coaching, of course.
It's good to see me, isn't it?
It's good to see me, isn't it?
Yeah. You get to do this every night.
Isn't it fun?
It's pretty amazing.
Floating in a bubble.
It's pretty cool.
You have the coolest job in the world.
Thanks. I like it.
Wow. Christina said it was a wicked ride. Wicked will be in Little Rock until October 6th. For more information, you can go to ktv.com. Definitely worth going to it.
In the next article, there's a quick little video montage of some production photos from the stop. So if you want to check that out, it has some excellent production stills. The next article is from playbill.com, and it's a little photo montage of Jane Brockman and her son Jonathan Shue, who were playing both in Wicked. The article chronicles the day of their life in the show, starting with breakfast and walking around town, going to the theater. So definitely check that out. That's from playbill.com. In the final article that we have, it's a quick little release from Broadway.com, and with Entertainment Weekly coming out with their Wicked feature, Broadway.com came up with some 10 interesting facts about Wicked. I'm only going to list one or two of them. So if you want to check out the full article, go onto our website. The first one that I want to kind of hit on is Christian Chenoweth was actually a little bit scared of the bubble. Technically, she said that she's not afraid of heights, but she did have an inner ear disorder, and she would get vertigo. So sometimes when she would go up in the bubble, she would be a little off kilter. So that's definitely kind of interesting. And the other one that I wanted to mention was actually Gregory Maguire didn't expect Wicked to last as long as it did. When he saw the show in San Francisco, he saw it about 8 times, and he wanted it to be deeply ingrained in his head in case it closed after 3 weeks. So from 3 weeks to 10 years later, I think that it's doing pretty well. So if you want to check out the other 8 facts, go on to our website and you can click on the link that will take you to the article. So that does it for this week's article section of media. Now we're going to head over to the video portion. The first video that we have is of Lindsay Mendez and Ali Mazzi sitting down with Richard Ridge, and they are giving a backstage interview about the 10th anniversary performance and how they came about to the show. And the first clip that I actually want to play is of the renovations that have been made to the theater. So Lindsay kind of goes into some detail about what's been going on construction-wise at the theater.
And for your new dressing room.
I know.
Can we talk about that? She got new carpet.
Well, that was it. I mean, it goes along with they're doing all these refurbishments in the theater for the 10th anniversary. It's a gift from the Nederlander organization. And so part of the deal was that they were going to knock out the alphabet dressing room to make more bathrooms for the women. And women, it's, we know, we need more bathrooms. In these theaters, there's always a line. And so so that room that has held every alphabet that's ever been in here is now going to be a restroom. And I took over the wizard's room, and they sent him upstairs.
It's fun, though. Yeah. We can see each other from our dressing rooms now in the mirror when we're getting ready.
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
And we're right across the hall.
We see each other a lot more because I'm in here the whole time getting green, and so it's nice. I can see her, and you know, we can connect a little more. It's great.
Because your old dressing room was sort of the Wicked Hub, right?
Right, and it was down, it's down the hall. It's like, it used to be, like, right kind of where all the stagehands gather and where everyone kind of, yeah. So now I'm a little bit further down, but it's nice for us, and it's great.
It's still a hub. It has to be because you're stuck in a chair for...
That's right.
Yeah, being painted.
That's right. Yeah, I can't leave my chair starting at, you know, 7:15.
I think they should put a plaque in the ladies' room now. This was Elphaba's dressing room.
Oh, man. That's a great idea. I'd really be excited about that.
Cool. I'd use it.
You'd go in a ladies' bathroom.
Right?
Next in the interview, they continue on and talk about how it's been to play together, Ali and Lindsay. And after that... they go into Ali coming back and basically talking about put in rehearsals, which actually we'll be talking about later in the podcast. And she really didn't need one because she was only away for 4 months. So she felt that it was still in her that, she really didn't need a full put in rehearsal. After that, they go into talk about how the show has been successful and why do they think audiences keep coming back to the show.
Happy with my answer because I feel like there's no words. There's just something deep rooted that people connect to in this show. I mean, I can talk about the friendship and, you know, these themes of, following your heart, doing what's right and things like that. I mean, there's some cool themes in it, you know, but there's also just it's this whole thing because combine that with the great costumes and sets and this story that we kind of knew,
right.
But now we have another take on it. It's just this experience.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I also think the theme of investing in a friendship and the theme of loss too that I think really runs through the show. I mean, for both of the girls, and I think everyone can connect with that too. I just think that people come in invested. These people, you know, from the downbeat of the orchestra, and then this incredible, phenomenal show happens before them. This, you walk out, there's no way you can walk out of here not being like, I got my money's worth, and then some seeing the show. It is so packed full of, you know, incredible sets, costumes, the staging of it is beautiful, the music is beautiful, and you really, you also take home, so many wonderful little, nuggets of a great story. I think it's just extremely well done.
Continuing, they talk about the upcoming 10th anniversary performance on October 30th, how Lindsay thinks it's gonna go, and how their first show went. And then a little bit later on, they go into how they came across the roles by auditioning and all of that stuff. And then the last thing that I want to kind of play from this interview is how they each get ready for their roles. And I thought it was certainly interesting to see how they prepared for the roles respectively.
You know, this doesn't help me to be Glinda, but I definitely check my high note before I have my little pitch pipe I blow. a little E, and I make sure it's in there, and then I head to the bubble. I see, it's me. I hang out in that bubble up high before the show, and that's a nice little moment to myself, because I don't, probably like you don't get a lot of quiet moments. You don't either. There's always people around, you know, so that's nice for me. And then I get a moment to kind of hear the orchestra and the ensemble, and that kind of preps me coming into that scene, you know, listening to, like, what's going on down there, because I come in there to bring them news and calm everybody down and tell them where it's going to be.
Sure. And for you, what's the last thing you do?
Well, it's like Ali said, I'm in here with my green team until the show, when the show's starting, I'm still getting green. And so I get no time to myself, except for right when my entrance happens, I run through a clock face. And right before it opens, and she's doing her thing out there, I stand there with my suitcase and I kind of prep my legs and swing my body back and forth like, okay, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. Here we go. You know, I'll see you in 3 hours, Lindsay. And then, and then it opens and I go. And then it's like, all right, I'm here. So that's kind of my little routine back there. But yeah, we both, it's like, it's so weird. I mean, the show, it's just so unlike any other show as far as the amount that these roles do. And you just, I feel like I always say I'm like a race car and my green team just like they just rotate orbit around me, and you know I come off stage and they're just like, I don't do anything, I can't touch anything because I have green hands, and they just do stuff around me, and I stand there and they push me back out there and out I go again, and then back, you know, it's just, that's my whole show, and then it's over and they push me in the shower.
That's because that they don't get in the shower with you.
Well, sometimes it's just so weird.
I love that.
It's a great interview. It's actually 26 minutes long, and if you want to check it out, it's on our website for the full interview. The last video that we have is of Anna Gasteyer performing an arrangement of Defying Gravity at her cabaret performance, Anna Gasteyer, Elegant Songs from a Handsome Woman, and that was back in June, on June 7th, 2013, in Indianapolis. This arrangement of Defying Gravity is a lot more... more ballady, I guess, if you want to use that word. It's not the powerhouse upbeat song that we're used to hearing in the show. It actually kind of reminds me of a video that I did a couple podcasts ago. And it's a lot more intimate and vulnerable. The first section that I want to play for you is the I'm through accepting limits part. There's just something about it that really kind of captures me for some reason. I can't explain what it is, but it she sounds excellent on it. So here's that first clip.
I'm through accepting limits, 'cause someone says they're so. Some things I cannot change, but till I try, I'll never know. Too long I've been afraid of losing love. I guess I've lost. Well, if that's love, it comes at much too high a cost. I'd sooner buy defy. Kiss me goodbye, I'm defying gravity, and you can't pull me down.
Now in this arrangement of it, they do skip the unlimited section that's performing the solo part, and they go right on to the so if you care to find me part, the very end, and she does bring it up with intensity in her voice, you can hear it, but then in the middle of it, she just all of a sudden subito piano and just like backs off. And it's that heartbreaking quality to it. So here's the ending to this song.
So if you care to find me, look to the western sky. As someone told I, and if I'm flying solo,
a message back from me. Tell them how I am defying gravity. I'm flying high, defying gravity, and you can't pull me down.
And if you want to hear the whole performance, you can go onto our website to check out that video. That's it for this week's media, and let's head over to Meet the Podcasters with Christina this week.
Hey, listeners, it's Christina here for another edition of Meet the Podcasters. Today in the hot seat is Isaac.
Woo!
So, Isaac, here we go. We're going to fire questions at you, and you're going to answer them, no matter how humiliating. So,
I'm really scared that I let you plan this one. I'm starting to think I should have let whoever knows me the least well plan this.
So who are you outside of theater?
Who am I outside of theater? I am finishing my degree in secondary education and biology. So I'll be certified to teach 6th through 12th grade science when I finish. And I direct children's theater, even the theater involved in the area. And I will graduate in May with my degree to teach, and then I don't really know where I want to teach yet, but hope to get a high school science job pretty quickly. So that's pretty much my outside of theater life is college.
Sounds great. Now, how did you get involved with theater in general?
When I was in third grade at Westwood Elementary School, they were doing Annie, and I wasn't in it or anything, but I heard these two girls on the playground singing Hard Knock Life, and I was like, ooh, I like that song. What's that from? And they told me. And I was like, I want to see this. And so I wanted to go see my school's production of Annie. And it's kind of this funny story because of all the misunderstanding behind it. But basically, my dad was an RN, and my mom had just had my little brothers, who were twins. They were like two at the time. They would have been two exactly at the time. Mm-hmm. And so they literally, like, they could not take me to see the show. There was not a chance, because dad was scheduled to work, and mom had the boys. And right. So I told my teacher, and she wrote my parents. I said something my parents said that they can't take me. And so my teacher wrote my parents a note that was like, if it's a money issue and you can't afford it, we'll get him tickets or something. And my mom was like, no, that's not the issue. It was just kind of funny. That's what she thought. And mom explained it, and here I'm aging myself here, that because nowadays this would never happen. My teacher actually came to my house and picked me up that night, took me to the show. Mm-hmm. And I still actually emailed her about a year ago because I credit her with getting me involved with theater and all that. So that was kind of how it happened. I started performing the next year.
That's a great story.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
So how did you fall in love with Wicked?
It was a combination of a couple of things. I'd heard of the show, but there were two girls that were going to do, there's an Alabama State Theater Festival called Trumbauer, and there were a couple of girls in my choir that were going to do What Is This Feeling for Trumbauer, and so I liked that song. And then one of my teachers, Miss Glassy, we were doing a unit on theater, and she mentioned Wicked and played some songs from it in class, and I kind of fell in love with it and started YouTubing it, and from there I just kind of fell in love with it, and that was in 2006, and I got to see the show for the first time in 2008, and the rest is history.
That sounds really great. So, how did you discover Any Window and Out Your Window?
I birthed it.
Did it hurt? How long was the labor?
Well, let's see. How long was it in the works? It was one of those things where my dad had been telling me for years, like a couple of years, I guess, that I needed to do something because I talked about it a lot.
Right.
And he was like, you got to do something. He's like, you could write a blog. And I was like, it's too much work. And then one day, I think I was just bored and did it. Mm-hmm. I think it was literally like an out of nowhere thing and I was, I got a couple of ideas for it, and I was like, okay, we're just going to roll with this. And I started it. And then a couple of months later, you joined me. And we've since then cycled through a good number of staff members. I'd like to think the ones we have now are pretty permanent ones, actually. And so, just looking at it, I mean, we've had, as of our current people, we've had Shira since early 2012, like January 2012, and Jonathan since mid-2012.
Right.
And you and I have been there since the beginning, and it's just been a blast. And it's, I think it's been a lot of fun, personally, and I really appreciate everybody's constant support of it.
You know, I have a theory. I think your dad wanted you to start the blog just so you would shut up talking about it in real life. He was hoping that would get you to shut up talking about it so much.
It didn't work.
No. I'd say that's what he's thinking. All right. Here we go. What would you consider your clumsiest moment of all time?
Oh, okay. That's a bad one, Christina, because there's so many.
Oh, come on. There must be one that is, like, you would consider the ultimate worst of the worst.
Worst, which one you may remember, when I slammed my head in the closet.
That was magical. I mean, I've heard of putting foots in closets and arms and fingers.
A towel out of the closet, and I was, like, pulling back from getting the towel out of the closet. And somehow, somewhere in my brain, I thought I would shut the door, and I was shutting the door before my head was completely out, and there was that. There was, of course, the number one. This is the worst, like the worst injury I've had because of my clumsiness. When my mom came home one day, and I was being stupid, and our kitchen steps down into the garage, and I was being stupid and jumped, and was like, Mom! And jumped into the garage door, and I hit it really hard with my head, and I grabbed my head, and I was like, ow. And so I was like walking down the sidewalk, and my mom was like, are you okay? And I think I hurt myself. I could, like, feel the knot rising, and I was like, did you know me when I did this?
No, I don't think I've heard this one before.
Okay. And
How old were you?
This is a killer one, then. And so I walked down the sidewalk. I was like, Mom, I think I hurt myself. Look at my head. And I pulled my hand off, and there was blood and hair all over my hand.
Oh, my.
And my mom was like, get in the bathroom. And so there I am, like, fully clothed, like, laying across the bathroom, my long legs all across the bathroom. And my mom has, like, my head under a spigot, trying to wash it off, and she was like, we're going to the hospital, and 9 staples later,
I
literally split my head wide open, and she told me that she could see my skull, which is why she was like, we're going to the hospital. And the worst part of that whole story is that I was 17 when I did that. I wasn't like 12. No, I was 17. So that might be the worst. I did fall out of a tree once and break my arm. I fell during Taekwondo and screwed up my wrist. I'm very clumsy when I'm behind the wheel of a car. I run my car into other cars. It's a thing. I don't know. I guess the clumsiest would have to be when I ran my head into the garage door. That was a particularly special moment in the lifetime of Isaac Evans.
Folks, we don't know how he's still alive.
We really don't. Like, what was it? What was it we said about you and I in New York? Between our mutual clumsiness, we're going to accidentally knock over the Empire State Building.
Yes, pretty much. So stay tuned for that, folks. Next April.
Video podcast.
Exactly. Okay. So tell us about a time when you put your foot in your mouth and got in big trouble for it.
Okay, foot in my mouth. And I'm actually very good at talking myself out of trouble when I need to. Very, very good at it. But I tend to think, where do I put it? You'd think it'd be a lot easier to remember when I put my foot in my mouth. I do know one time I called when I was younger. My dad, he's a preacher, for the record, made me angry about something, and I called him a hypocrite.
Uh-oh.
Got in pretty big trouble for that one. I don't think I saw my Game Boy for a month. I was young when I was stupid enough to do that. I don't know, other than that, I can't think of a time I've really put my foot in my mouth and just left it there.
Okay. Well, I mean, no, you can be pretty snarky when you want to be, but you
don't
have to talk.
It's usually in good humor, you know.
Well, I don't know. I've seen some of your postings, so some of them don't. Some of them don't seem to be in the best humor I've ever seen.
Give me an example. What's one?
Okay, just like when you're insulting, which rightfully so, but you're like insulting various people for their driving skills or their skills as a customer or, you know, what have you. Or that one you made about the teacher and the falling asleep in class recently.
Oh, that was that, but that's ridiculous to me. I'm sorry, but she literally made a comment. Like, she was like, if your kids are falling asleep in class, you're doing something wrong. And I raised my hand and I was like, but there are kids that have circumstances outside of class, like some that might have to work all night to support their family because there's something going on. And she was like, well, that's true, but you have to address it somehow. Well, I'm like, I'm glancing around and I'm like, there are kids asleep in here. And she has not said a word about it, but okay. And I actually really like this lady. I was just like, really? But it was just an opportunity for humor, so I used it. I would say it to her face, most likely. That's why I have problems.
Lots of them. Lots of problems.
Yeah.
All right. Name a time when you were the worst big brother ever.
Oh, this one's easy, actually. When I was probably... Oh, how old would I have been when I did this? It was before we moved into this house, so I was... It was before I was 12. Mm-hmm. I was probably like 10 or 11, because it was shortly before we moved.
Okay.
My little brother and I shared a room. Mm-hmm. And we had this rule in our family, we still technically have it, but it's not an issue now, that on Christmas morning, we could not wake up our parents until after, I want to say it was like 7 a.m. or something like that. And my little brothers were still really young. And so I knew if they woke up that they wouldn't even try and put them back in bed. And so I went and pushed one of my little brothers out of the bed. To make him wake up and start talking. I did.
That's evil.
I did. That was one of the examples. I'm not sure what else we've done that's really. I know sometimes we'll put on like a song and start dancing and really stupidly dancing just for the heck of it, just to be stupid. And sometimes we'll do it and like we'll come up with these horribly obscene dance moves and we'll start like twerking. it's just a random, you know, little brother, big brother thing we just always do, Noah and Nathan and I, just as a joke. I guess that's not the best example I could set, but you know.
All right, and the final question. If you could take a musical theater role, a female musical theater role, and play it in drag, what role would it be? And it can't be one of the roles that's normally played in drag, the trunch role.
You know this answer. You know this answer, Christina Daniels, don't you?
I have an idea, but that one has been played in drag once, so I want you to find another one.
Oh, wait, so I can't use Miss Hannigan?
No.
But, I mean, come on. It's only been done once that I'm aware of.
All right, but now pick one that hasn't been done.
Okay, well, obviously, like, Elphaba would be really fun, but that's not, like, something that can be done in drag effectively.
Yeah, you got to find a really good one.
See, Ursula's been done in drag once, Little Mermaid, and that would be fun. Something that could actually be done in drag, legitimately. Thinking about it, I'm not really sure what could be done at this point. What about the witch and Into the Woods?
That would work.
That would work.
I mean, Madame Thénardier and Les Miserables could be done in drag. I mean,
didn't they talk about having Billy Porter do it in the revival in like 2002? Wasn't he like in talks to do it at one point?
Really? That I didn't know.
I've heard that before. I guess The Witch and Into the Woods, overall, it'd be Hannigan and Annie. I would love
to. Oh, I know. Completely inappropriate role for you considering what you look like and who you are. Effie and Dreamgirls.
Yes, that because that would be a thing. I can
now you know you can sing it. I'm telling you, I'm not going.
I am telling you. Yeah, no, not happening.
Oh, come on! I want to see like a 1960s wig going. No, 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 no. I ain't living without you.
Not happening. Not happening. It'd be better. It'd be worse than Audra McDonald trying to perform that role.
That would be kind of. I love her, but yeah,
yeah, I just do. Oh,
so not be right for that role. So, all right, dear. So now we have embarrassed Isaac, the clumsiest, lousiest, draggiest big brother.
I don't think this is going.
Ever. Thank you, listeners, for listening, and we'll see you on the next edition of Meet the Podcasters.
Hi, listeners. This is Isaac, and Christina and I are here to announce the winner of the 10th anniversary contest.
Woo!
So we had a really good time, like, reading your essays and everything, and seeing the video, and it was that we had one video sent in and several essays, and it was really hard to pick. And by really hard to pick, I mean I sent it out to our little panel and said, hey, guys, take a look at this. And little panel proceeded to return me, like, all four people that submitted responses on my panel, all four of them gave me a different answer.
That's how we do things.
And I was like, no, this can't be a thing. But there was one essay that everybody mentioned in some way or the other. And so we decided to go with that one. And it's an awesome essay. We were so thrilled to have it. And so we are thrilled to announce that joining our podcast next week for a one-week engagement will be the lovely Mark Phillips. So, Mark wrote us an awesome essay, and we are absolutely excited to have him on here. And so, yeah, we will be getting in touch. Or, Mark, actually, I'm going to ask you to, if you don't mind, get in touch with us via the Facebook page, or you can just email us, and we will set up your sections for next week. He'll also get to be involved. We're going to call Donna Vivino one more time and chit-chat with her a little bit. We've already recorded most of that interview, but as we announced, Mark will get to help pick some questions for it. And yep. So we're going to work with him a little bit to select some new questions to ask her to add to the interview. So it's really exciting, and we're really thankful to everybody who submitted the all of your different entries. It was wonderful. There was some great, great work. So congratulations, Mark, and we'll hear from
you. Congratulations, Mark.
Makes me think of hand lotion every time I hear that. I don't know why. It's a thing. Anyway, so congratulations, Mark. And we'll talk to you soon. Hi, everyone. This is Isaac, and Jonathan and I are joined today by Haley Pachoon, who is currently performing the role of Glinda on the second national touring company of Wicked. Previously, she has performed in several shows on Broadway, including Chaplin, Anything Goes, Pal Joey, Sunday in the Park with George, Hairspray, and The Sound of Music, in addition to extensive national touring, regional, and television and movie and commercial work. We're really excited to have you with us this morning, Haley. How are you?
Hi, guys. I'm good. It's rainy here in Oklahoma City, but by the time this is aired, I will have moved on. So hopefully it won't be rainy the day that this airs.
So tell us a little bit about yourself as a person besides not liking the rain. Like, do you have any cool hobbies or things you'd like to share with everybody?
Oh, God. I feel like I'm so boring when it comes to stuff like that. I guess, like, some of my favorite things to do, like, because I live in New York City, I just like really walking around the city and just kind of hanging out with my friends and going to new restaurants. I love eating lots of, like, fun, interesting food.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That in New York City.
I'm sorry?
There's a lot of that in New York City, a lot of different restaurants.
Oh, yeah. I like, you know, pretending like I'm a foodie, like I know exactly what I'm talking about. But really, I just like tasting, like, awesome things that people make.
So I guess that's kind of nice being on tour, too. You get to see, like, a variety of different food, you know?
It's it's so great. Me and Jenny Denoya, who plays my Elphaba, and David Perlow, we're, like, big foodie people. And so we always try and go out to at least, like, one nice meal in every city. And then I always kind of research, like, if there's any restaurants that have been featured on Food Network. There's an app on my phone that I have to try and find those. So we try and hit those up. And I always get donuts in every city I go to. And so far the best donuts have been in Kalamazoo at Sweetwater's Donuts.
Wow. Well, shout out to Sweetwater's. So tell us a little bit about how you started performing. How did you get into it?
Oh, God. I started when I was a kid, like, forever ago. I mean, I remember watching the Disney Cinderella in my living room, and I had this, like, little apron, and I had a stuffed mice, you know, the little Gus, stuffed mouse, and I forget the other one's little name. And I had frozen corn that I would get from my mom from the freezer, and I would, like, throw it on the ground. I mean, I'm an only child, so I had no one to play with except myself. So you can only imagine how imaginative I had to be. And I think just from there, like, you know, I was in dance classes and, like, little gymnastic classes, and I just kept going. And, you know, I tried sports, but you had to run, and you got dirty and sweaty, and I didn't like that. So I quit all those.
Oh.
I'm such a girl. And then, I don't know, I just started doing theater when I was really little, and I've just been doing it ever since, and I've been really fortunate to call it my career.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Hang on just a sec. Let me stop that phone.
Cell phone.
That wasn't even my cell phone. It was our house phone. We have that antique. We still have a house phone, too.
Nice.
I know, right? It's only because my grandma's 91 years old and refuses
to. Oh.
But that's a whole other story.
So you made your Broadway debut at age 11 in The Sound of Music, right?
Yeah, 12.
Oh, 12. Okay. So what was that experience like? You were covering that, right? You were, like, understudying.
Yeah. Yeah, I covered Luisa and Brigida. It was awesome. It was just like a dream come true. I mean, you're a child and you get to be on Broadway. There was nothing greater. I had the greatest time. And I was in the show had been open for a while and I was a replacement. And unfortunately the show had closed only like 4 months after I had joined.
Did you get to go on?
I'm sorry?
Did you get to go on in it?
Yeah, I went on, I think, 2 or 3 times for Luisa. I never got to go on for Brigida. I was supposed to go on for a week, but the show had closed a week before I was supposed to go on.
Oh.
I know. So I had, like, all these family members flying in, and then they didn't get to see the show, which was sad. But they at least, like, my grandparents came, and we got to take them around New York, which was really cool.
Yeah. So you did the show with Laura Benanti, didn't you?
Yeah.
But what's that like thinking back on that now that you got to do that show with her, you know?
She was the nicest person to me. I remember she had me over to her apartment one day and we just like hung out. We ate peaches. And she was so, so lovely to me. And I'll run into her every once in a while, in the city. And it's just fun to see her. She's so talented.
She is really amazing. I think it's really cool that she's going to be Elsa Schrader in the upcoming.
I know, it's so crazy. And I feel like in the little press thing that they released that they didn't even mention that like she had done Maria on Broadway. I was like, you guys, she was amazing. How do you not mention that?
Oh my gosh.
She was really young too also when she was doing
she
that.
She was 19.
That is crazy. That's like younger than I am. Like, I can't
it's
even
not so. That. She was, oh my gosh, she was so good.
So do you think at the time, being 12 years old, do you think you realized the magnitude of what you were doing?
I think I realized it more then than I do now. Because I remember waiting for the whistle because we all entered from different parts of the stage. And as the Luisa track, you entered from this trap door underneath the stage behind the house. And I remember like looking up into the flies and waving at one of the guys. And then the whistle blew. And I ran through the doors and I stood on my mark and you just face out into the audience. And I remember that moment being like, oh my God, I'm on Broadway. This was crazy. I couldn't believe it. And then now, I mean, every time I do a new show, it's like the most awesome feeling, you know, to go into your theater and get your spot and, you know, opening night. It's so much fun. But there's something just like a little more memorable with Sound of Music, just because, you know, as a kid, it's something that you really, really dream about. And then for it to happen as a child is like something I will never forget.
That is amazing. So do you think you knew that young in life that this was going to be your career?
I wanted it to be, but what was so sad is that Sound of Music had closed so quickly. And, you know, here I was at 12 years old. And I was seeing all of these adults, like, all of a sudden being put out of a job, and they didn't have a job the next day, you know. And as a kid, like, I just go home with my parents. But for them, the reality of that hit me of, like, well, they could audition for something and not be booked for, like, 2 more years. So they could be out of a job for 2 years. And so I remember going back to Kansas, and it was just when, like, you know, internet finding a job on the internet was something that you kind of did. And I remember researching at 13 years old online for like other jobs that I could do. It was like so depressing. I remember like having this journal of like what other jobs I could do, what skills it required, like what I should go to for college if I wanted to do that job, because I didn't want to be in theater, because I didn't want to have the, you know, I didn't want to not have the job security of, you know, my show closing and then not working. And then I went, you know, it was time to like apply for college, and I was like, oh, well, I can't do anything else, so I guess I'll just go for musical theater.
It's really, you sound like the most 16-year-old I would have ever met in my life.
No, it was, I mean, looking back, like, it was so sad. Oh my God, it was the most depressing.
So, I mean, do you think, if you weren't doing theater, do you think you could say, like, what you think you would do? Do you know?
No. I mean, I've always wanted to work with kids with special needs.
Right.
So I would still love to do that. I kind of always wanted to like put together this summer camp where we like put together a show with kids who have special needs. Uh-huh. That's like something that I would love to do someday.
It's a possibility for the future.
Yeah. Miss Britney Spears. I'm a huge Britney Spears fan. I'm a card carrying member of her fan club. Uh-huh. And she had I showed you guys my Britney Spears fan club card?
No, I don't think I've seen it.
Well, next time you see me, I'll show you. It's in my wallet.
There's some Britney Spears song somewhere.
Yes, I've sang them multiple times. But she had a summer camp for kids, and I was like, well, I want to do something like that. But I was like, maybe I could do that and then mix that with my, like, wanting to work with kids with special needs. So that's my little blurb about my dreams someday, but I have to feel like I have to have so much money, like Britney, to do that.
Maybe if there's a musical about Britney Spears at some point, you could play the role of her.
I would die.
That's really. I mean, I'm finishing up my degree to be a high school teacher, and so science teacher, but still, that requires a lot of stuff with special needs as far as classes and that kind of thing. So
yeah.
I just love if that's something you're interested in.
I would love it. I love science. I'll go to your class.
Okay, you should come to my class.
Oh my God, I would love it. I really love science.
It's a lot of fun. It's a really, really exciting career. And I'm
going to work with, oh my God, I can't even think of the word now. I'm so embarrassed. I can't think of the word.
Yeah,
microscopes.
Yes, definitely. I've worked.
I love dissecting the frogs and the hearts and everything.
We did a fetal pig and we did a cat in my college biology classes.
What?
It was crazy. You felt really sad doing the cat, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, see, I feel bad. Please, like, anyone who's listening to this, please don't hate me. I wouldn't feel bad about the cat. I would feel so bad about the pig. I'm afraid of cats. I have this theory that they'll kill you in your sleep. I really do. I don't trust them.
So another exciting point in your career is that you got to play Tammy in Hairspray, and I know you covered Penny as well on Broadway and on tour, but also in the movie. So what was that like?
Yeah, I also got to cover Amber, which was really fun. So I got to, like, do complete opposites whenever I went on for my girls. But it was cool, you know. I started with Hairspray on the tour, and I did that for about a year, which was great. It was such a good experience for me. At that time in my life, because I hadn't, like, I had only gone to college for 1 year, and I was lucky enough to get cast, so I didn't have, like, a home base in New York, so I wasn't crazy homesick. I just, like, packed my bags and started moving around. excuse me. And then literally, like, I think I had a week off between the tour and when I had to move to Canada for rehearsals for the movie. And I actually got cast in L.A. when the tour was in L.A., and I was playing Penny while we were in L.A., and Adam Shankman, I had my audition that day. They saw the show that night, and then Adam had called me the next morning and was like, you got the movie. Congratulations. So it was really cool for him, like, to see me in the show and then to get the movie, which was a dream. And they had not given us our council names. They wanted to, like, get to know our personalities first. And Adam, since he had seen me as Penny, he didn't even know that I had played Tammy. And they just randomly were like, okay, you're Tammy. So it was just like, I guess I embody Tammy very well. So I got to be Tammy in the movie. And then literally on the first day of shooting the film, I got a call from Craig Burns saying that they wanted me to join the Broadway company of Hairspray as soon as I was done filming. So I had a day off after I was done filming and then moved to New York and did more Hairspray.
I mean, what was it like doing it in the movie? Was it radically different, I guess, than stage acting?
Yeah, it was, well, it was so different because I'd done the tour for a year, and then all of a sudden, here I am doing it again, but with, like, completely different choreography, more, like, a little bit more realistic hair. We danced in corsets the whole time because that's, you know, the style of those costumes. So that was interesting. So, like, whenever we'd have dinner break, like, we never took our corsets off because we'd eat too much and then have to put them back on to dance some more. So we'd always keep our corsets on during dinner and we were starving.
Really funny.
What differences are there between like film acting and stage acting? Because was this your first time ever doing film acting?
Yeah. It was interesting doing the dance numbers, especially because we'd be done and there was no applause. It was just like silent. And most of us had done, were stage actors. So we were kind of like, okay, where's the audience? And once we started filming the Miss Teenage Hairspray, like the whole end of the movie, we had an actual audience. We had extras. So that was kind of nice for all of us. but it was so different. You know, I like being in film because you can always go back and watch it whenever you want. And you remember like, oh, I remember that day, like, what we did that day, that morning, or like the night before, like we went out to dinner or something. Whereas like theater, you know, you just kind of have to remember it unless you're lucky enough to maybe grab a possible bootleg. But, you know, but, yeah, I mean, they're both so different, but so awesome. And they both require such different skills.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Were most of the council members, had a lot of them done Hairspray on stage before?
No, only me and Jesse Weaver, who played IQ, were the only two people in any Hairspray company who had been cast in the film.
Wow, so you were pretty lucky to get that.
Yeah. And then Brooke Engen, who is one of the twins, Brooke and Tiffany, Brooke ended up getting cast on Broadway a few months after we were done filming. So we were the only three people who had ever done Hairspray who were in the film.
So let's chat a little bit about your other Broadway work. Are there any other shows on Broadway that you did that really stood out to you as special?
I mean, they all really did because I've been lucky that all my stuff has been so different. I remember getting cast in Sunday in the Park with George, and that was really special for me because I didn't have to go through a dance call because I'm such a dancer. Mm-hmm. And this was my first Broadway musical where I got cast just straight on my singing. So that was really neat.
Happened for that?
I'm sorry?
Weren't you the dance captain for Sunday in the Park?
Yeah, and I got to dance captain and work, you know, with Chris Catelli, which was, like, amazing. And now I'm so lucky that he's had me on a few projects as his associate. And so that's really cool. But, you know, like, getting to work next to and meet Stephen Sondheim was pretty awesome. And then, you know, Pal Joey was amazing because I got to dance again and I got to work with Graziella Danielle and Joe Mantello and Paul Gemignani, and like that whole team was ridiculous, you know. And then Anything Goes was just like kind of a lifesaver at my time in my career. At that time, I was kind of like maybe wanting to be done with the business, and it kind of came in and started as a swing. And just that whole company was such a family, and we just had a party every night. And then I got lucky enough to be bumped up to Virtue and cover Irma, and I went on a lot for Irma, which was really great. And then Chaplin itself is like a whole other story. That's like all of my dreams coming true in one. I got to do I got to start with the lab of it. So I kind of got to do that from a creative process and then do some table reads as the script was changing. And then take it to Broadway and originate a role, be in a new musical that had never been done before, you know, record a cast album. And just that company of people, like we all knew that we were in something special and we were so proud of it. that we all still stay in contact and are very, very close.
Yeah, I was going to actually both saw you in Chaplin back in October.
I'm always so happy when people say that they saw it just because it meant so much to me. There was a girl at the stage door the other day. She had a little music book of Chaplin, and I was just like, I have to take a picture with you, and I got so excited.
Yeah, we saw it in, I want to say October, wasn't it, John?
Yeah, like October 7th or something like that.
Just around or on October 7th.
Yeah, basically, and we both really enjoyed it. And it was.
Well, thank you.
It was so cool when you guys
were, like, really blown away by Rob McClure. And
I can't even talk about him. He's the most magical human being.
And Jen Coella.
Jen, she's so ridiculous. That voice, come on.
We listened to All Falls Down, like, all the time on iTunes.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous. And I can't, her voice, it's so silly.
And Glenda, Erin Mackey.
Yes, Erin. And that was our second show we did together. We did Anything Goes together, so we were really excited. Me, Erin, and Bill Ryle, we had done Anything Goes, and then we went straight into Chaplin together, so that was really special.
I saw Erin as Glenda a few times, and she was really, really amazing.
Oh, my E.
We kind of laughed, Jonathan and I did, because we knew who you were before Chaplin. Because, I mean, I knew you from Hairspray, and I'm sure Jonathan knew you from other stuff. But we kind of laughed because your name kept on floating around as, like, a rumor fans passed around that you were going to come in as Elphaba.
As Elphaba?
There's this website.
I can't even sing that. Oh my god! At the end of the show, sometimes I'll try and belt it for Jenny, and she's just laughing because it's so bad. Oh my god! If I had to play Elphaba, I think the show would close. That's what Jenny and I always say. Like, she says, if I had to play Glinda, it would be terrible. And like, I'm like, if I had to play Elphaba, the show would close.
I think it'd be kind of fun, though, to switch the roles just for a night. Yeah. You know,
I wouldn't be able to keep a straight face. I would just laugh at myself the whole time.
The only pair right now that I think could switch, because I saw the first national tour a few nights ago, and I actually think that their Elphaba and Glinda, Alice of Luff and Joan Gambetis, could switch and would both be good in the
Oh, Elphaba. Yeah. I always thought Gina DeWall would make a really fierce Elphaba.
She would.
I have a special guest who's going to do my impression of me singing Elphaba.
Okay.
This is the star of Munchkin Land, Jennifer DeNoia.
Hey, Jenny.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well.
We're roomies.
Oh, awesome.
My dog is...
She's attacking me.
Yeah.
Okay, so I told them about how I sing to you sometimes during the curtain call.
Oh, yeah. It's so brilliant. And this is my impression of Haley. Being Elphaba.
Oh, God. You have to see the arms, too. I'm, like, spreading my arms really wide.
Tell them how I am defying gravity.
I'm flying high. That's me. Defying gravity. It's so bad. Ava, honey. So, hope you enjoyed that.
Oh, that was hilarious. So, Haley, do we get to hear you do Jenny as Glinda?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I've never actually done it for anyone.
Oh, exactly what I said.
But this is how Jenny thinks that she would sound as Glinda. Is that the...
Is the... Boy.
She goes, boy, I'm boy. But whenever she does it, her eyebrows raise really high.
I can
see the only way I can hit those notes.
I can absolutely see it. That is hilarious. Am I allowed to leave this in for everybody to hear?
Absolutely.
Oh, they're gonna love this. That is.
Once, hadn't you done every female role in the show except for Glinda and Marble?
Oh, yes. Jenny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
That's crazy.
She's a celebrity.
Oh, my goodness.
So, like, moving on to Wicked, tell us a little bit about your process for being cast in and then rehearsed in this massive show.
So my journey was quite long. I was here, I auditioned for the show on and off for 6 years. I originally went in, you know, I've only ever been in for Glinda. And they were so sweet. They were like, you'll totally play this role someday, but, you know, you'll probably need to start in the ensemble and cover Glinda. And I just felt like this is such a role that I want to do so badly, and I know I can do it, and I believe in myself, that I just kind of was like, you know, I'm just going to really only try for Glinda. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, but I'm going to try. So I only ever tried for Glinda, and 6 years later it happened. So it was just right time, right place. You know, I needed some life experiences, some, you know, maturity, I think, to handle it. Cause I just think I would be better now than I would have been, you know, 3 years ago. I wouldn't have been ready, and I'm glad I get to do it now. And especially, you know, I get to do it with Jenny, which is so special to me. We've become very close.
Were you ever offered an ensemble track that covered Glinda?
I'm sorry?
Were you ever offered an ensemble track that covered Glinda?
No. No, I never went in for the ensemble.
Cool. So how would you describe Glinda?
Oh, she's just a girly girl. You know, she's this privileged girl who she's just kind of always been told yes. And so when she gets to shiz and things are kind of not going her way and she's kind of told no a lot, mm-hmm. It's like, but that's not how the world works, you know? And, I don't think she's not a mean girl. She's very smart. But she knows how to kind of manipulate things to get her way. And I don't think that's necessarily so much a bad thing sometimes. You know, she's just been told yes her whole life. She doesn't really know any better.
Right. It's like a spoiled child almost.
Yeah.
So do you have like a favorite part of the show to perform every night?
It honestly changes every single night. And I will tell you, like, I really do in every show. I have one moment where I freak out and I'm like, oh my God, I'm in Wicked.
And is it?
But it changes every night. Oh. But I will say that my favorite, I think, song and like scene to do is Thank Goodness. Just because I get to use all different parts of my voice, and I really like that scene in between with Fiero. She kind of like grows some balls in that part, and I always kind of enjoy doing that. I just like get to stand there and sing, which I've never gotten to do in a show, so it's really exciting. But you know, I like to do Loathing because I get to dance with everyone on stage and dance with the ensemble. And since I don't get to really dance in the show, I kind of use that, you know, Corinne and Mark, who are the dance extraordinaires on Wicked, they come in and they're like, Haley, you have to tone down your dancing. But I'm like, I want to dance. Just let me dance.
That is great.
Yeah. So do you have like a favorite city? Well, how has touring been so far for you with touring with Wicked?
It's good. It's so different from when I toured with Hairspray. Because when I joined Hairspray, I joined the last year of it, and by that time they had finished their really long sit-downs and were on one-weekers. And so now we go anywhere between 2 and 5 weeks, which sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's like, okay, we're in this city a little too long. I'm ready to move on. But I definitely feel like I get a little more homesick on this tour. I think just because I've been in New York for so long, and this will have been the longest that I've been away from it since I moved there back in, like, 2006. Mm-hmm. So, but I've had some great cities. I loved Rochester. That was my first city I opened in. What other cities have I been to? Madison was really fun. Milwaukee was awesome. I'm really excited for Kansas City. I think when this airs, I'll be in Kansas City. That's my hometown, which I can't even begin to describe how excited I am. We're performing in the theater where I did all my dance recitals growing up.
Oh, it's always so cool when you're like on tour and then you get to play your hometown and you like get to play a venue that you grew up in.
Yeah. I had heard a rumor that one of the tours was going to Kansas City, and I was like, please let it be the one I'm on. Please, please, please. So I think being in Kansas City will make up being in the coldest part of the country in Buffalo in January. So,
yeah, that's going to be pretty tough. I guess that'd be kind of tough on the vocal cords too, wouldn't it?
We'll see. I have lots of scarves.
So what do you find the most challenging about doing this role 8 times a week?
Honestly, I think sometimes the most challenging thing is if we get an audience that's too quiet for me. Mm-hmm. Because my, excuse me, because my role requires so much of an audience kind of participation. Yeah. If it's a quiet house on, like, let's say a Saturday matinee, it's a little more work to, like, get them going because, I don't know, it just requires a lot of energy. But luckily I have a lot of energy. But I think the traveling kind of does it too. You know, you're in a new city. You have to deal with the allergies. This city has been really tough with my allergies. But I'm just having a blast. So for me, it's not work.
Right.
Yeah. Like, the audience interaction, we've discussed this on the podcast before. And, like, I think it really does make it, like, an impact, especially for Glinda, especially, like, in Popular, where, like, if the audience is really into it and, like, applauding and cheering and they're super into it, then the Glinda can keep, like, you know, stepping it up a little bit. Like, one Glinda in particular that I've seen to do this is Allie Mozzie. When mm-hmm. audience, like, go crazy for her, then she just keeps giving the audience more and more and more, and it's amazing.
Yeah, my whole show depends on the audience. And if they're not that vocal, which is not saying like they have to scream and cheer, but you know, every night is different, and sometimes if people don't want to play along, it's a little bit harder, but I still enjoy it. I mean, look what I get to wear and like what I get to sing. It's really cool.
Yeah, that is really awesome. So do you have any amusing bloopers from any show that you've ever done that you'd like to share?
From Wicked?
Any show? Well, you can do Wicked or you can do any show.
Oh, goodness. Bloopers.
Have you had like a no bubble show?
Not yet. Oh my God. Knock on wood. I haven't had a no bubble show yet. Oh my goodness. That would be, my problem is I laugh so easily on stage, and it's actually really not fun for me because when I start laughing, I can't control it. So. It honestly, I really don't enjoy it. And sometimes like Jenny and David will like do a little eye thing to me or something. And they know that I'll just lose it. And I'm like, you guys, you can't do that. So if I have a no bubble show, I just hope that I'll be able to keep it together because I feel like I'll just laugh the whole time.
Doesn't yeah. like walk on stage and like, I'm here guys. Is that what it is?
Yeah, you basically just walk across the stage like a toddler in tiara, like a slow walk.
No, it's funny you say that because Julia Murney tells the story of her no-fly shows as Elphaba, and the first time it happened to her, her Glinda was standing to the side of the stage laughing hysterically the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Even harder. Because what can you do?
Yeah, I knew the first time it happened with me and Jenny out here, I knew that she really needed my support to not laugh, so I was trying everything possible to not laugh, and I did a really good job. But when the ensemble ran out and landed on the floor, I had to hide my face because it looked like a slumber party.
Is that the time, like back in April or May, maybe?
Yeah, it was quite early on.
Jill talked about that in her interview a little bit. Because was that the time that Michael Drolet ran out and like flew across the floor? Basically?
Yes. Like flew across the stage and he lands center stage with like, oh no, he doesn't have his pitchfork then, but it's
thank God.
It just like this sleeping bag, like crossing the stage. It was so funny.
Oh Lord. So do you have any huge dream roles?
Glinda. I'm serious. Glinda was my dream role.
Oh, that's amazing.
Other than Glinda, I would die to play Winifred in Once Upon a Mattress. Mm-hmm. I would really give anything to play Queenie in Andrew Lippa's Wild Party. Mm-hmm. And oddly enough, like I would really love to play Roxy in Chicago.
That'd be really fun. It'd be kind of different than stuff you've done in the past, you know?
Yeah, I want to play roles where I can dance and sing and be funny.
That's
So I think that's like a good combination for me. Maybe, hopefully they'll have me someday.
Maybe so. So what advice would you give to aspiring performers?
Oh, gosh. I would say involve yourself in as much, you know, theater as you can if you want to. Even if, you know, you need to work backstage, you need to work on the costumes, you should light a show. You know, maybe assistant direct or something. Take dance classes. That is huge for me. Take voice lessons. Just, like, try and do everything you can because just being on the stage, I feel like, doesn't give you the awareness of all the people that it takes to put on a show. I know, like, in middle school, like, I would light some of our shows and I would run spotlights. I choreographed some of the dances. You know, I student directed a lot in high school, and it just, it really makes you aware of what it all takes to put together something so special.
Mm-hmm. That's so true, isn't it, though?
Yeah. And the hard work, you know, you need a dresser. Without a dresser, you're not going to be going and making it on stage and the time. You know, we need every single person. We need the stitchers because if someone's costume rips, you need it that night in the show. We need the hair people because otherwise you could be wearing, like, a horrible synthetic wig out of a bag that, like, isn't brushed, you know. We need everyone.
Yeah, I think when I did university theater, that was like the first time I really got an appreciation, even though I did theater in high school, middle and high school, just the parents do it. But when you're at college level, you know, student, I don't know how it was when you went to Boston Conservatory, but like students did everything. And so,
yeah, unfortunately, like I don't really remember because I was only there for a year. But yeah, you know, I remember more like my middle school, high school stuff. It's like we all did it ourselves. So
yeah, like I remember I did, I don't know if you're familiar with Honk. But I did college, and we, like, if I hadn't had a dresser going on that point, like, there was a quick change that I had to make in that show that if I hadn't had a dresser to do it for me, I literally could not have made it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I would literally just, like, stand there and she would change.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just such a great thing. I think I agree to get involved, you know, as much as possible and take classes. Mm-hmm. So, well, thank you so much for joining us, Haley. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my gosh. This was such a treat. I'm so happy you guys invited me on the show.
Thank you.
We're glad you enjoyed it.
I had a great time. I hope you all enjoyed it who listened. Thank you for listening to me.
And tell Jenny thank you, too. I don't know if she's still there. But
I will. She, I'm sure, says thank you very, very much. She can't wait to hear
that. That was kind of a nice surprise that happened.
That was a neat little surprise. We'll have to have her on the show at some point.
Oh, she's great. Well, I was telling the story, and I could hear her upstairs, like, making fun of me. So I was like, you need to come down here. So.
All right. Well, you have a good one, Haley.
Have a good day. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. Make sure to stay tuned for next week's special 10th anniversary podcast. And if you have any comments or questions or any type of feedback, you can contact us on Facebook at Innuendo and Outuendo, or on Twitter at wicked_blog, or email us at editor@innuendoandoutuendo.com. Have a great week, everyone.